My name is Emily. I'm 29 years old. Today's date is February 22nd, 2023. I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Joe.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm 67 years old. Today's date is February 22nd, 2023, and I'm in Orange, Virginia. I'm here with my one small step partner, Emily. And
Joe's bio says, I am an atheist, but honestly don't care what anyone else believes. I volunteer at a mobile food bank and look for non-religious ways to participate in the community. My wife and I moved to the community 2 years ago in order to be closer to her grandkids. I'm from Jersey, and I'm told that sometimes it shows. I have been an industrial electrician and mechanic for over 45 years before a botched hip replacement caused retirement.
And Emily says, I went to college in Richmond and decided to stay. I consider myself not a liberal, but a leftist or a socialist. I worry a lot about climate change and animal rights, and I care about helping people with addiction. One experience that changed my life was dating someone who struggled with alcohol, largely losing touch with him, and then watching him die. I facilitate a weekly recovery meeting. I struggle with the conflict of being angry about injustice, yet knowing hatred can't solve it.
So why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
I was just mostly curious. I bailed off of Facebook 2 years ago. So much hatred from one side to the other. I could see it coming from both directions, and it's like, I'd like to decide who I want to hate. You know, don't tell me. You know? And yeah. So I figured I'd just, you know, when you meet people at work, which is mostly where I have been meeting people, that's already a filter, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, here's somebody outside my filter. Why not? And here we are.
That's really cool. I like that a lot.
So, why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
So I found One Small Step through this. It's like this monthly gathering of creatives and, like, I guess, marketing professionals, and the guy in charge of StoryCorps, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Dave Isay, he spoke there, and he really made a pitch about the importance of connecting across the divide, and it was something that really made a lot of sense to me, because, like I said in my bio, like, I just, you know, hatred can't solve the conflict, and I wanted to be on the side of the solution, not on the side of the problem. So I wanted to. I feel like connection is genuine connection is the only thing that can really solve society's woes in the end. So, yeah.
I also saw, the same guy that you saw in person, I saw him on a Glenn Beck episode. And he was like, he makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. He
does. There's some to actually do something constructive. So, this is as constructive as it gets.
You know? Exactly. Yeah, he seemed very, very concerned. And he's like, I'm so concerned about the country. This is one possible solution. And so I was like, yeah, makes sense to me.
No. So one question I was kind of wondering about, uh-huh. I don't know if I'm going out of turn or not. I don't know.
Oh, you're fine.
Basically, and I kind of wrote this down because I was kind of wondering, like, oh no, suppose she asked me something like this. You know, mm-hmm. You mentioned that you view yourself as a leftist.
Yeah.
Why? And okay. And I got a follow-up question too, but let's hear that one first. Why leftist?
Okay. I find that a lot of what I see as liberal politics is sort of how do I say it? I'm sort of against any system that just forces people to slog through horrible conditions to be able to just make a living and be happy and have you know a good a decent living. And I feel that a lot of liberal politics are sort of on the same side as what I see as conservative politics, in that there's this you have to do everything yourself mentality, and it doesn't matter that all of these amazing resources exist in the world that could be given to you. They're not, because you have to get a job, you know, even if you're really disabled or anything like that, or like, you know, and I think, for example, housing is a human right, and that nobody should have to be homeless. And so I see leftism as a kind of like, we should share the resources that exist, regardless of who owns what, in order to make sure that everyone is safe and healthy and provided for. So that's kind of how I see it.
Well, a lot of that sounds, well, more libertarian or anything, because if you think about the communism, basically ends up with like the state owning everything and constricting what you're supposed to do. And leftists always seem to think they would come out on top in a situation like that. And people don't really come out on top unless they're millionaires. But
well, that's I kind of feel the same way, that people don't come out on top unless they're millionaires. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see that as libertarian, but I also don't want to get into the weeds and get all particular about like everything, because I guess we're not supposed to do that, but like but that's really interesting to me that we have sort of the same view that that wealth is pooling in an uncomfortable way that doesn't allow people to live their lives.
Well, basically that's kind of like leading to, I was thinking, like, I'm kind of more like in the, well, I guess it would be more like the right wing thing, but I'm not, I disagree with so much of it, because I'm kind of liberal when it comes to anything social. You know, I've had a lot of gay friends, just, you know, the whole racist thing. Like, I was born in New Jersey. It really doesn't matter to me, you know, if you're black or not. You like, don't start off a conversation with like, you know, back in my country, because I don't want to hear it. You're not there. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what made me think I was a conservative. And basically, I'm in favor of the Second Amendment and the First. Mm-hmm. And, well, all the others too, actually. But aside from that, it's just leave me alone. I got enough issues with my own life, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's where I was thinking. And, you know, I just wondered about that. And I also wondered, you said something in your bio about you struggle. I got this printed out here, so I don't lose my track here. You mentioned that you struggle with the conflict about being angry about injustice, and no one, hatred can't solve it. Well, no, I was wondering, like, what personally have you seen that was an injustice, and what did you do to alleviate it, rather, you know, aside from just being angry that it happened? Did you actually take an action?
So the only actions that I feel I've really taken are voting, and I've been to like a protest once, but I would like to take more action. I feel that I haven't necessarily taken very much action, and that's it can be hard to know what to do, honestly, because even like if you're, even if you're trying to like donate somewhere, how do you know that your money is going to exactly what's important to you? Yeah. Yeah. But, and I feel like you had another question before that, what was that?
Oh, well, basically I was just kind of, that kind of was my second question. It was like, okay. why would you identify as a leftist? You know, and then this like combated injustice. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of injustice per se in my life. Mm-hmm. And
You're wondering like what I've seen.
Yeah, maybe. I've only seen one. There's one in story in particular to come out. My brother and I were in the bar years ago. Mm-hmm. All right. And my brother Billy, 2 years younger than me, he was a bouncer at some strip clubs and stuff. He was the kind of person you really wouldn't want to mess with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was always kind of like a quiet person. I'm talking now. It's amazing. But, yeah, we were sitting in the bar, and this, like, I guess you'd call her a bag lady, come up, basically homeless. She was looking for, you know, to buy some beer. And the bartender ignored her, walked by her like almost three times. Because the third time, my brother Billy just reached over the bar and grabbed him and said, you know, you're going to wait on her right now, or I'm going to come over to the bar, take you out, and then I'm going to wait on her. What do you be? I know. And I was like so proud of him for actually standing up and actually doing something. And like, I've always kind of regretted, like, damn, I wish I'd have done that. but he was just, he did things like that. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is inspiring watching other people do stuff we wish we had the guts to do. I've definitely felt that way before,
too. Yeah, but aside from that, I haven't really seen a whole lot of other injustices.
So I think the thing about injustice is that it can be hard to see because of the way we're sort of trained and the things that we're brought up to believe, like believing that, for example, I said that like I think housing is a human right. And so I think like we're brought up to believe that you should be able to work a job, make enough money, and afford your own housing, and that if you can't do that, you're lazy. But the way it is like we already talked about, like the wealth is pooling with these billionaires, and people are, you know, the wage gap between just the wealth gap between the poor and the rich is increasing. Mm-hmm. And wages may be slowly going up, but they're still going down in proportion to the cost of living. And so when the system stops being fair, where you can simply just get a job and afford housing, then what do? And I think we sort of owe it to people to provide them the resources to live. And I also, and I'm an atheist as well. I saw that you are. Yeah. But if I have a sort of spiritual belief, it is in the dignity of human beings and the inherent deservingness of them to be like healthy and safe. And so I think sort of no matter what someone's circumstance is, they don't deserve to be out on the street, no matter what they've done, really.
Well, I don't know if that's really punishment or not. Like, all right, for the housing situation, right? I have a friend I work with in North Carolina, and because I just recently moved here, and mm-hmm. his basic retirement plan was he bought a few houses and he was renting them so that when he hits like 65 or 70, he's one of those people, he'll never retire, he'll die there. But that's his plan. That's going to be his income. Mm-hmm. And there are most of my life, I couldn't afford a house because you can't afford the down payment. Mm-hmm. So basically renting was a good way to go. Then along comes COVID, and all of a sudden he can't evict people they don't have to pay his rent, but he still has to pay the mortgage.
Right.
All right. So he's basically, you know, pulling all the overtime he can, just running himself into the ground 80 hours a week to buy housing for other people. All right. So where's the fairness in that? There's got to be a balance somewhere.
Oh, yeah, there certainly does.
I don't know what that balance would be, but it's, you know, it just, if you look at it from both sides, they're both right and they're both wrong. So then what do you do?
I think the distinction that I would make there is that it's not on him to fix every single one of society's problems. It's not really on the individual. It has to be sort of a wide systemic change where there's like widely pooled resources so that nobody is being put out for anybody else's well-being. And I think in such a developed country that we're in, I think that's possible.
I don't know. I hope so.
I hope so, too.
I kind of like that Elon Musk is pooling, is keeping a good part of resources because he's making Twitter more free. And I'm a big fan of SpaceX. But Teslas are nice, but mostly that's just the street racer in me. You know, they're fast, you know. Mm-hmm. So I like that, but they'll never sound like my Hemi.
They'll never sound like what?
My Hemi.
Oh, what's that?
I got a Hemi charger. Just I'm a muscle car person and never grew up.
Oh, so. I know like nothing about cars. They're pretty in pictures sometimes. I don't even have one. I have a bike.
Oh.
So that's my muscle car. Because I have to use my muscles to power it.
Oh, like a pedal bike.
Uh-huh.
I grew up like motorcycles and things like that, and it was weird the first time I got on a pedal bike for like 10 years, 15 years after riding one. I rode down into the street pedaling, and I like grabbed for the clutch, and I was like, oh damn, I'm gonna stall this thing. It was kind of hard adapting.
See, I don't even know how to drive, so I would be equally confused in a car.
Oh, well, it was just strange not having a motor doing it, but mm-hmm. I got over it.
Going up hills can be pretty nuts.
Oh, just trying a stick shift in traffic. That's a great way to learn.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so. No license.
Yeah, no license.
How do you do that?
So what happened was when I was in high school, I really wanted to learn to drive as soon as I was able, like 15 and a half, whatever. And then my dad had some excuse. He was like, your grades aren't good enough. And I was like, really insulted by that, and I was so mad. I just wanted him to apologize. And even later on, when he was okay with me learning and he drops the grades thing, I don't know, I was just still so betrayed that he didn't trust me that I wanted him to apologize before before he would teach me to drive, and he never did. So I never learned. And then I just haven't needed a car since. I don't really want one. I live in, you know, in the city of Richmond, so I can bike or take an Uber or Lyft if I really have to get somewhere far, but yeah.
What about just a plain old desire to go, like, I personally have been driving, the only state I haven't been in is North Dakota.
Oh, wow.
My wife and I once went to Kansas just so I could say I've never, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Are you going to go to North Dakota? Are you trying to check all of them off?
Well, yeah, eventually, but I haven't found a reason to go to North Dakota yet.
I hope you find a reason. Yeah, I am really interested in traveling. Don't get me wrong. I actually went on a road trip with friends this past summer, and we got to see. We went from my apartment where we had like a week long party because they were visiting from out of town. Some of them came from as far away as the Faroe Islands, which is like part of Denmark. Mm-hmm. Then we went on a road trip to Shenandoah National Park, which is a beautiful place in Virginia. If you get to mm-hmm. go there, you should.
Yeah, I've been
and then
there.
We went, yeah, it's awesome. And then we went to Nashville, and then we went through some city in Kentucky, I'm blanking on the name. And then we went to Chicago, and it was really fun showing my friends and getting to see some new stuff. I really do want to travel and experience America. But the thing is, I don't own a car. So if I were to want to drive around the country, I would still have to rent one, and that would cost a ton of money. And I just don't see there being a scenario where I'm wanting to travel in a car and I don't have a friend with me who can drive. It would be nice to be able to drive. Like, I want to learn, but it's just not like top of my priority list.
I grew up wanting that, you know? So
yeah, it's central for a lot of people. It's like the way to get around, especially for people who weren't born in like metropolitan areas. Like, that's your key to the world. So it makes sense.
Well, I grew up in like a suburb, Old Bridge, New Jersey. It's like 45 miles south of New York City. Right. And like, a car was essential. First of all, I was in New Jersey. You had to get out, you know? And like, everything was like car involved. Like, there was a drag strip, just like you could hear them every Wednesday, every weekend. And I grew up in that. And it's just like, my parents were the same way, you know. They were both like the black sheep in their family, both also bitten by like, they had, you know, it's time to go. Not having a reason to stay is an excellent reason to leave.
I agree.
So it's strange you don't have a car.
it is kind of strange, but I sometimes like to be strange.
I admit to that a lot myself.
I wanted to ask, I saw you've been an electrician and a mechanic for 45 years. That's pretty neat. I've never had any kind of like technical or like tinkering skill at all. So, I'm curious about that.
The mechanical thing I was just kind of, I fell into, I started... All right, like I went through college too. Well, not through it. I went to it. Georgia Tech, until I found out that, my father died when I was like 17. Mm-hmm. And his like wishes were that I go to college and, you know, basically do all the things that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I got accepted at Georgia Tech before he died. And it was this big thing that I should go there. So I did. And I found out that I got in, didn't really have a clear idea of what I wanted to do. And so I went to be a psych major. Mainly because one of the people who was involved in the psychology department there was heavily involved with NASA back when they were picking the Mercury 7. Uh-huh. And like, he hung out with the astronauts, he knew them. I always wanted to fly. So, all right, I wanted to be in one with him, Dr. York. And that really isn't enough. Because I quickly ran out of money and stuff. And I got jobs working like construction and things like that. And toward the end of my stay there, I realized that, first of all, I was spending more time working and studying, and that wasn't working for me. And I also noticed that I was making a whole lot more money in construction than the people that were getting out with doctorate degrees and packing bags at the A&P, hoping that someday they'd get a job. Mm-hmm. All right. And like, I had a Camaro to support, and it was like one thing led to another. And I basically figured I would just kind of put a pause on that while I went to work in a factory till I had enough money. And like, there's no such thing as enough money.
No, there never is.
So I just started gravitating toward the maintenance people there. Because I started off, everybody starts off as a machine operator, a forklift driver. Mm-hmm. And I hung out with all the mechanics because we had a lot of stuff in common with the cars. Mm-hmm. And I would end up fixing stuff for them. They would let me use my lunch breaks to rebuild gearboxes for them and other things that you would do to kids to make them do your work for you. And I just liked it. I started doing it more and more. Excuse me. And I just kept doing it. And one day, one of the electricians I worked with basically quit because there was like two mechanics and one electrician for shift. And I was like, well, if he could do it, I could do it. So I looked at the print, and it was kind of easy to follow along with what, you know, how everything was supposed to work. Hmm. And I found a problem and fixed it. And everybody else knew that the only thing they knew about electricity is it would kill them. So I figured, cool, I can do this. Because yeah. Basically the only thing I know about boilers is they explode. And that's all I need to know.
Reminds me of when my friend said the first rule of electrical safety is have fun and be yourself.
Well, it's really not that hard.
A little more complicated than that, but
well, it's not that much because nobody's trying to fool anybody, mm-hmm. and nobody wants to be the only person to know how something works because you're the one they call at 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so everybody knows how everything works. You know, don't call me because, like, yeah, nobody wants that at 3 a.m.
Yeah, so, definitely not.
Should we move on to, we're wandering all over the place. Is this good or not?
Well, but, I was thinking, part of the reason that I was curious about like your job and stuff is that I feel like a big problem in the political divide is that there's sort of with sort of liberal people and liberal spaces, there's kind of like a disdain for the working class, I think, that I think people pick up on. And it, and you know, I kind of, you know, as much as I disagree with the conservative perspective, I kind of have sympathy for people who feel like they've been looked down upon by people with more resources and more like education and more you know, that don't know what their lives are like. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just feel like I see that divide, and I work in an academic setting, so I feel like it's especially easy to see there, like I work in an office and there are, you know, everybody in my office working around me believes in like social justice and making the world a better place and bringing down racism and that's great. But then I see, I don't know, I see like the custodial staff and the people who fix the electrical work and like the people who carry the shelves back and forth. And it just seems like they're a different class or in a different caste than we are. And it makes me really uncomfortable because we're all human beings and and you know, academic spaces are supposed to be about equality and stuff. So that's just something that's on my mind a lot with the political divide.
There is a lot of that.
Yeah.
Not only, well, basically, there's skilled and unskilled in like factory work, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody sees the whole world as a pyramid with themselves at top, at the top. All right.
Yeah.
Like electrical workers see like mechanics as lesser beings and operators below that, you know? And like, of course you got like the office people that just push paper, and you got the sales people that just drive around all day taking people to lunch and buying them drinks. But the salespeople say without them, nothing else matters. People in the office, like the accountants, they figured, hey, if I don't pay people, nobody would show up. Nothing would happen. The people on the floor, like actually like making the lipstick and the light bulbs and frying pans and widgets or whatever, they figure, well, if we're not actually doing anything, like nobody else will nobody else will be able to be supportive. Yeah. And then if you're like, maintenance may think they're on top, but they may get all the girls, but but you know, like, but they're only important when nothing works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like they don't count, and everybody looks at themselves as being on top. And and it's not really like that, or it's, I don't think it should be like that, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
And I would even go so far as to say, and I work in one of those like knowledge based, like intellectual jobs, and I do think that what I do is important, but if my job stopped existing tomorrow, the world would still go on. Whereas if we lost the people that make the food and the people that, to, you know, pick up the trash, then we'd all be screwed.
So I just
think that that whole hierarchy is problematic. And I think part of what I like about leftism as opposed to liberalism for me personally, is that with leftism, there's a huge focus on workers' rights and on sort of bringing this message of equality to everyone and not just people in these academic intellectual spaces.
Well, the thing about like leftism and communism is like, where is the workers' rights over in like Russia or someplace like that, where basically everybody is like slogging through life with empty shelves and, you know, like how does that really work out aside from for the people on top?
So well, it's I don't consider myself a communist, actually. I don't know if I like the idea of the state controlling everything.
Yeah,
I more consider myself a socialist. And there are actually pretty prosperous socialist countries. Like a lot of the Nordic countries have like have a good degree of socialism. In fact, the country where my friend is from the Faroe Islands. He has access to like universal healthcare and everything like that. So I definitely don't endorse like all of the things that like Stalin did. And I'm not pro like Mao Zedong and all the famines that happened and everything. Like I certainly think that leftism can be done badly. I just have a strong feeling that people should be given unconditional care and resources, and that's sort of where I'm coming from.
We went and took a lap around Iceland. That was really cool.
Ooh.
In the winter, loved it. So best vacation we were on, and both of us hate to be cold, me and my wife. But there are a lot of, like their education system's really cheap there. There was a whole lot of expatriate Americans living there. you know.
You're breaking up a little bit for me.
Why?
I want.
Did my cord dangle or something or? No.
I think it's on Emily's end. I think it's on Emily's end, Joe, because I can hear you. So she just dropped out of the room. I'm sure she'll be right back here. So just hold that thought about your experience in Iceland. It's interesting. I'm sure she'll pop back in here.
All right.
I'm just going to pause the recording for a second.
Okay. Okay, so I guess we're live. Basically, like, got a rented car. He was from Tennessee. The hotel, well, one of the hotels we stayed at. Damn, I actually got water. She was like a college student that basically went there because college was like $500 a year for her.
Yeah.
And just working at the hotel covered that. And
that's great.
Iceland had a lot of good benefits, like aside from like the social thing was cool with that. They had no flies, which is really amazing, and no mosquitoes. Like, life was good. It was just cold, but very picturesque. Yeah. So I lived a lot of my life through my camera lens.
Oh, you take photos?
Oh, yeah. I've been doing that since I was like 13.
That's awesome. Yeah. 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 Iceland seems really neat. I would love to. I've actually only been outside of the country once, to Canada, and I was 2 years old. So I would love to travel outside again. But I would also love to, like I said, see more of America as well.
America's like got everything.
It does.
Yeah.
Even when I went to Chicago, I took my friend all around the city, and because I had been there before, and so I kind of knew where to walk and what to show him, and it was even just within that single city, I used the phrase worlds within worlds, and then both of us kept saying it, and we walked all night long, and there were just, every time you turned a corner, there was like something different, like a different vibe. There was, and one thing I really loved was there was this church that was like almost like looking like a castle, and it was on this block with all these stores and neon lights and just in the smack in the middle of the city. But it's this church, and we went into the courtyard, this beautiful garden. It's like incredibly peaceful in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. And there were homeless people sleeping on the steps of the church as well. And we sort of walked around the garden and looked at the fountain, and I was just kind of thinking, wow, like, you know, if you have to be homeless, this is a good place to do it. it was just a really special moment. So and you know, it was a church, and I'm not a fan of religion, but sometimes the beauty of a space just transcends. But I say I'm not a fan of religion, like I don't like hate religious people or anything like that. Just I think sometimes all the rules and the organization and the dogma of it can get to me. But I'm learning to be more open-minded and friendlier with my family members that believe different things.
Yeah. Well, religion does do a lot of good for some people, mm-hmm. but I think if the only reason why you're behaving is that you're afraid of burning forever, yeah. it's like, are you just, you know, being held hostage, or are you really a good person?
That's kind of my thinking too. And I also just don't think that the concept of hell is a good or compassionate one at all. I just don't think a God would be in favor of that, like a good God. So.
Well, anyway. So should we get, oh, 10 minutes.
Yes.
Just give you the warning. Okay. I guess we should go to other questions.
Sure, yeah.
We're just wandering around here.
But that's okay.
Most influential person in your life. Who would that
who
be?
Who would that be? I mean,
it's got to be real. No, like, you know, Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah, no. I wasn't thinking of anybody that I haven't met. I was thinking of my dad. I mean, I guess obvious reasons. Both my parents really cared about me. Like, they're certainly flawed human beings who get on my nerves, but I feel like he taught me to use like critical thinking, I guess, and I appreciate that a lot. But also, I mean, I mentioned in my my bio that like my ex who struggled with alcohol, he was very influential in my life actually, and he was influential in a way where I think we all have this this dilemma, or well, okay, I have this dilemma of like what is evil, what is badness actually, and I've come to the conclusion over the years that it doesn't really exist and that people are inherently good. But I had to get to know this person who struggled and hurt me so many times, and see up close that as much as he hurt me, he still meant well and still had good intentions. I had to see that in order to sort of realize that I believe in the goodness of all people, if that makes any sense. Well, what about you?
Well, for me, I've got two written down. I don't know if one would have been possible without the other. So I guess first would be a girl named Vicky that I was living in Arkansas at the time, basically because it was cold in Jersey and it snowed in October. So I went to the U-Haul place and I said, how far can I go for $1,000? And it was like Hope, Arkansas, which was warm, and then places like Montana, which were like cold. So I chose Hope, Arkansas, and met people that I worked with there. And one of them had was married and was taking us to your forestry course. And she had a friend that was in the forestry course with her who was getting basically evicted. Basically, I went and like, we split a house together. She was like a lesbian, but still in the closet. And, well, sort of. It took her, like, everybody knew it, but she was trying to hide it still. And it was like the first time we ever really had to deal with women as people rather than as, like, you know, wow, a sex toy. It's like, no, like, something like, wow, she is into a whole lot of the same things that I like. She's got her own hopes and stuff for issues. She likes and don't like things. And it's like, we just had a whole lot more in common. And it just changed the way I viewed women. Because grew up in Jersey, it's like, they're toys. But because of that, through like several other failed, probably because of my like maintenance background, like I can't leave broken stuff alone, you know?
Yeah.
And finally I ended up with a good wife. Like we've been together like 18 years, and still celebrate the 22nd of every month, because one of the things she said was like, you know, anybody can behave themselves for 6 months. It's like, then what are you going to do? So now we're up to like 250 something. It's like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Just wait till my true self comes out.
So the 22nd is like your anniversary, or?
Yeah. Yeah. June 22nd in like over 18 years ago.
You celebrate it every month. That's awesome. I love that. And yeah. Yeah. Like, happy anniversary today.
It's not as big a deal as it used to be, you know.
That's great, though.
But still, it's still a race. Like every morning, every 22nd, who gets up first to say happy anniversary? Yeah. And sometimes she cheats and stays up the night before to wake me up to tell me that.
That's so cute.
But I've done it to her too.
So. Yeah, my parents have been together for counting their dating and stuff, definitely over 40 years, and they're definitely still like, I feel like a lot of people stay together and they aren't in love, but my parents are definitely still in love. Sometimes I don't understand how, because they're such different people, but I definitely can see it, and I definitely want that for myself, and it makes me happy to see long-term relationships that are still really happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot of meshing going on. 5 minute warning. Yes. I can't believe how much I'm talking now.
You're fine.
I'm basically an introvert.
Me too.
And my wife's the talker. So when she gets, now I'm talking. When we get together, like with her family and all that, it's like there's so much going on with everybody talking. I just kind of shut up. And I'm waiting to leave, you know, even if I get there for like a minute, you know, like she's over her daughter's house right now. So I'm supposed to meet them there for dinner. It's like, yeah, I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I get overwhelmed by my family too. They get really cranky and I'm just like, do you guys hear yourselves?
Well, but still, spend some time
exactly,
with them.
Exactly, yeah.
Because
I'm trying to learn to appreciate that more.
Yeah, you're going to regret that in like...
Yeah.
You know, nobody lives forever. And they do disappear on you. And like, the only thing you think about from then on is like, I should have spent more time.
Oh yeah. And so, I know that feeling also from my ex who died. And I think about that with my grandma right now, because she's, 88 now? And she's also, she has very conservative, religious, political views. And so I find it hard to relate to her sometimes, but I'm getting to a better place with that, and learning how to just sort of listen to her, like listen to the emotional content of what she's saying. And I was actually having a FaceTime with her when she was in the hospital, and she just started getting really emotional and like crying a little bit and then laughing, and I was just kind of like hanging in there with her the whole time. And then afterwards my dad texted me and he was like, thanks for FaceTiming. Like she engaged with you in a way that she doesn't with us. And I was like, wow, like this person that I've struggled to relate to, like we actually had a moment there. And I don't know. So I feel optimistic, but I do need to call her more, because she's definitely not going to be here forever.
Oh. And they have like interesting perspectives, you know, like my grandparents, they grew up like before airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Like,
you know, it's like, I'm my grandparents' side, from my mother's side, they escaped the Russian Revolution. Mm-hmm. So they saw a lot of history.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. So you have a personal connection to that whole communism thing.
Well, with it being like grandparents and great grandparents, so it's not really a whole lot of personal connection. It's just, you know, some important event that happened in history that, you know, it's kind of like if you were asking me about Vietnam, I was not personally there, but like I studied a lot about it because I, you know, I was at that age. I, you know, I was just like 2 years younger, 2 years too young. Yeah. And like, I like pretty much knew I was going to go. But yeah, but I wanted to fly, you know, and it, you know, really wasn't important to me if they were shooting down pilots. Like, I don't care.
I'm I could never have that perspective. That's I'm so scared for my life in scenarios like that. Yeah, you seem to be very like on the move and just going places. And I sort of like, maybe not in the Vietnam situation, but I sort of envy that with the traveling and everything. But I was also just gonna say, I think that things that we don't directly experience can definitely still affect us. And I think that's a lot of what's going on in the world today, actually, is people just know about all this stuff that's happening. They don't know what to do about it.
Well, don't be so envious about being so free and stuff to travel, because a lot of it is not having a good reason to stay is an excellent reason
to
go.
That's fair, and I do like
returns. And that is 80% of it. So
the final question, what's something that you will take with you from this experience?
I don't know. It's been a good experience, actually. So as a leftist, you're not that bad. I mean,
well, that's...
I don't know what to say for that.
Here, yeah,
you don't really say anything that was outright leftist.
No,
you know, it really did seem more, you know, libertarian stuff, just looking to get your own self through life, you know, and just trying not to hurt other people.
I think that the difference that I would say is I think that I want to get everyone else through life too, if I can. Like, I want to do what I can to advocate for other people, not have it all be on me, but. I want all of us to be okay, not just myself. But I think I've often thought that there is a huge disconnect between sort of the core beliefs of leftists and of people like me, and what we're perceived to want, which is, you know, that's the classic like political gap struggle, is that people don't understand how the other side is like, what the other side truly wants. But it strikes me, and to answer this final question for myself, it strikes me how much we ultimately have in common, not just for like personal reasons, but politically. Everyone does just want to live their lives and be happy, and they don't want to hurt anyone else. They want other people to be happy. It just impressed that upon me again. Like, that was something that I already believed, but talking to you and seeing that you didn't have any objections to the basic idea of what I think, that was nice.
Great. Apparently we still have more time when we're out of questions.